Welcome to your one-stop shop for all things deals, discounts and tips when it comes to buying pretty much anything, really. And on this week's episode, energy prices are coming down. Now, it's only £1 million to put a radiator on rather than two. What's this actually mean for your bills? Plus, we're talking consumer expectations. Now that we have the likes of Amazon as a template, do we expect too much from smaller businesses when it comes to things like free returns and next day deliveries? We want it now! Good news, if what you want now is false economy, it's happening. Welcome to False Economy.
Powered by Hot UK Deals, the UK's number one app for deals, discounts and freebies.
Vince Clayton, consumer champion, shopaholic and occasional comedian. And joining me, back from the bright lights of, I want to say, San Marino, is Paul Watson. How are you?
Hello, hello. Yeah, good, good, thank you.
Where have you been and why?
I have been to San Marino, which is tiny little republic within Italy. And what I can tell you is that our podcast became very popular in San Marino while I was there. One of the biggest podcasts in San Marino, I imagine, in that I played our podcast while I was there a few times to see if I could get us onto the top of the San Marino podcast charts.
And? Yes?
I don't know. We'll see.
Did all five residents of San Marino carry you through the streets?
Right, yeah. I mean, honestly, it's quite a funny thought that we could become the biggest podcast in San Marino if we can just convince sort of about 20 people to put it on.
So let me get this right. You went to watch the biggest losers in football lose another game.
Yes, I did.
Is that what happened?
Yes, it is exactly what happened. And the joke is on me.
At the cost of your own time and money.
Yep, and they're going to play again on Sunday. Basically, what it is they've got this world record streak of losing or of not winning. So they have not won for 20 years.
They've made it their thing.
It's their thing, and genuinely, they've got this like cult following of foreigners who turn up to watch them, but the local people do not care
to see if they're there for the one time they win.
Right. It's like buying a lottery ticket. You remember when like you do the same numbers every week? And you buy a lottery ticket. So the week you don't buy the ticket is the week that those numbers will come up. So like I'm now thinking they're going to win and I won't be present. So I'm like, do I have to get back out there now and watch them play Liechtenstein? Do I have to get back out and watch? Yeah. So it becomes like a weird addiction to like, can you be the one who's there when they win?
Yeah. That sounds like a really good use of your time and money. And yeah. We'll talk more about that later. And Charlotte Redding is here as well. How are you, Charlotte?
I'm doing all right. I've had a terrible cold, so I haven't been to San Marino. I've been to the sofa. But by the sounds of things, I've had more fun.
I haven't been to San Marino, but I have been to the sofa. Would you be a little bit disappointed if they won, though? In a way, like ending that streak. What do you want from that match, Paul? Like,
no, I did want to see them win.
There's a real perversity to those fans, if you ask me.
I wanted to see them win because it would stop me having to do it again.
I think their tourist board don't want them to now at this point, though. Surely.
I said to someone, I bet this is like some sort of inside scam that they are trying to do this just to keep attracting these 10 idiot tourists who come out and buy loads of beer and sing loads of songs in their favour while the rest of the stand just sit there looking like you're mad.
Who are these clowns?
Anyway, this is not a sports podcast. This is a personal finance podcast. But that does sound like folly. Right. Anyway, I'll tell you how this podcast goes. It starts with us talking about energy prices. Now, they are inexplicably, based on everything else in the world, coming down. What's that about, Charlotte? Is it really true? Is it true?
I mean, it is true. So I got an email from British Gas the other day, which is how I found out about this, saying that my energy bill was coming down, that I was going to be saving some money every year based on their estimates, which is always a nice thing to hear. So the price cap has obviously been agreed to be lowered. That is coming down by 12% from the 1st of April. So the price is coming down from £1,928 a year to £1,690 a year on the cap. So that's a 12% decrease on the cap, which is fairly substantial. For the average household, that means a saving of £238 annually, which is not something to scoff at. Unless, of course, you've already agreed some absolutely extortionate fixed price tariff, which isn't going to vary by the cap.
But there is safety in that. And I think in these times of economic stress, knowing exactly what your payment's going to be is kind of worth paying a premium for in these rare occasions that it is less than expected. So I think there's an argument for fixing still. Like, you shouldn't feel too bad about it, I don't think, if you've made that decision.
Oh, absolutely. I think, like, there are currently some really good deals around on fixed tariffs in light of kind of the latest considerations and the fact that the predictions are all that the energy prices will continue to decrease over the next couple of years, that we're on kind of a downshift of the value of that cap. But, yeah, have a look around, check out the deals. But yeah, there's some fixed price tariffs if that's your go-to. I've been on flexible for like a few years, I think, because at the time when all those prices shot up, I got an email from British Gas that said, so you can either, you know, throw caution to the wind and pay whatever seems right, which at the moment is you paying like, what, £90 a month, right? You can either do that or hear us out. You can sign on to pay £300 a month for the next 2 years, just in case it goes higher
probably
than that.
Not, and actually. I was like,
so, because they rang me up and they were like, oh, you know, we've got these tariffs available. Do you want to do it? And I was like, but okay, hear me out. This deal's not going anywhere, is it? She was like, no. And I was like, so I can sign up to the fixed tariff at any point in time. Yes.
Yeah.
But why would I do that?
Closer to 300.
I really wonder how many people sort of fell for this. They were like, you know, you should really consider one of these fixed tariffs. I was like, there's no incentive for me to start paying more now.
Yeah, I'll let you know if I decide I want to pay three times more for the same thing. I'll give you a call on that.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Bubs. But, yeah, because they are an absolute shambles, though. Because the thing is, they've sort of been fobbing us off for a little while now about the rising cost of energy by saying things like the war in Ukraine. But actually, you know, the energy's not more expensive. They are making profit, just not enough profit. They are not making enough profit that they want to pass down any savings that they're making. So it's kind of about time this has happened. And they're an absolute shambles as well. You pay for a service and the service is negligible. I had gas and electric with one provider, with British Gas, actually. Mm. And at one point, they just stopped taking for one of the bills, which I didn't notice. I don't check that. You know, I set up the direct debit in good faith. I didn't notice it. And then a year went by and they're like, surprise, you owe us 8 years worth of money. And I was like, yeah. And then I had to just pay twice as much then for the next year, which was a fucking nightmare, frankly. So,
normally they only stop the direct debit if you've overpaid, don't they? And they're just like, you've got credit.
They made a mistake, but I had to pay double for their mistake. They're like, oh, we made a mistake. We stopped taking it. Pay now.
Like, there's always a bit of you that thinks, what if I just don't say anything and they never charge me? I remember...
Paul's about to confess a crime.
Well, no, exactly. I was paying rent on a new flat in London and I was in a flat share. And I got given the bank details and I was transferring it. And the first month I transferred it, second month transferred it, third month, I just forgot. I hadn't put a direct debit, a standing order. I just literally forgot. And just no one said anything. And so I got like 3 weeks into the next month having not paid it. And I was like, is this just going to work? Am I just going to live for free? And then sure enough, I got an incredibly angry email and had to pay the whole lot. In one block, but it was like just this moment where I was like, what if you just stop paying? Yeah, and turns out I advise
squatting,
against that.
Paul, I think it's what happens.
They do notice it. Well, yeah. Apparently it's very hard to kick out squatters, but yeah, but no, I would say, generally speaking, however distant your landlord is, they will probably notice if you just stop paying a rent. That's what I learned. Yeah. And I learned that at the age of, I think, 23 and learned it very well.
Yeah, I've spent it now is not a good. They don't do
no.
Yeah, I had it and I've spent it now and that's on you, British Gas. That does not wash. Even if you take
saying
the time
stuff like, can't you just be cool? Or like, oh, Matt, really? Oh, you're not going to be cool about it. They also don't respond to that, weirdly, which...
They're incapable of chill, I think.
Yeah. Oh, you go, oh, chill, man. Chill. Come on.
Their job is heating, though. So I do kind of.
Yeah, true.
Oh, that's a rolling blow.
I know. I'm
is.
So sorry.
You think you've got to the heart of how bad that is. And then you think about it again. It hits you twice as hard the second time. Right. Anyway. So, yeah, good news. Good news. You might be saving some money on your energy. Finally. But put that money away to pay one of the inevitable other bills that will probably creep up instead. Because, you know, inflation, well, inflation's popped up again. Everyone was very excited. The inflation hasn't gone up. And it's like, oh, what difference will that make to your money? Nothing. Literally nothing. It will be more expensive More slowly. That is what...
More expensive, more slowly. Congratulations. What a win for society.
What a win, yeah. But I saw people talking about it like, oh, what will this mean? Nothing. It means nothing to your money now. You will not get a rebate. Prices are not coming down. It's one of those terms that the government uses to be really pleased with themselves, but ultimately not enough people know what it means. It should not be celebrated. It is not a good thing.
Yeah, it sounds good. So I don't understand anything about money particularly, and it always sounds good. And the way it's spun, you're like, oh, this has got to be good. So you're telling me this does not benefit you in any regard, right?
In real terms, not massively.
No.
Right.
Yeah, you'll be paying the same rather than more for a little bit, perhaps, if inflation doesn't go up again next month, because it is really volatile. And it's a lot of, because it's an average, it's a lot of some things have stayed flat and cheap, some things have got more expensive, some things have got a little bit cheaper. And it's such a complicated formula. It's from a consumer point of view, it's not actually going to have a massive impact on your life immediately. So yeah, it's interesting to see that covered instead of other things that do matter. Anyway, that's a bit grim. Do you know what's not grim? Well, maybe it is grim. Buying stuff. Buying stuff's nice, isn't it?
You love buying stuff.
But that is basically the podcast. If you've not listened to an episode so far and this is your first one, that sentence, that's pretty much it. You're saying that and me going, is it? I don't know, I suppose.
No, it is.
Buying stuff you need, that's nice. When you, like, nice. You know, something breaks and you replace it.
No, thinking about something that might make your life a little bit more fun, for example. It's just like, what would my nails look like if they had mirror balls on them? And do you know what? The beauty of shopping online is I can be looking at that, I can be putting it in my basket, and I can have it as soon as today without leaving the house. And that is great. But is it? Is it great? Because the Amazonification of shopping...
Have you just made that up?
Maybe. It went on a lot longer than I was thinking it was going to. When's this going to end? There are so many syllables.
I'm going to start using it in other areas of life. I'll be like, the Amazonification of the way you view our relationship. And people are like, what?
Oh, wow. It's just instant gratification, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good phrase.
Everything it's all got to be reasonably priced. So there was some discourse on the artist formerly known as Twitter yesterday about DoorDash, which is kind of the like Deliveroo Uber Eats service that America's got. And people are annoyed about how expensive it is to order freshly made meals directly from restaurants, delivered to their doorsteps, handed over by a driver who's done that for them. And it did make me think, we are used to the level of service we're used to for the price that we pay for it. Somebody is being exploited. Like, it should not cost £2 to transport a beautiful meal from a restaurant to your house.
Yeah.
It's economies of scale, though, isn't it? Like, it's only so cheap because they're giant corporations. But I saw a rather disgruntled small business owner complaining in a Facebook group of other business owners about how, you know, the people complain to her all the time. She runs a little jewellery business. Her biggest gripe is the number of customers and people who say that they won't order from her because she doesn't do free returns, for example. She won't do free shipping and she can't guarantee fast delivery dates because she doesn't have a large supplier agreement with a courier company. And all of these things that actually, you know, they cannot compete, and people are being turned off from that because they can't provide the same levels of service that the large corporations can. And I think that it's true, they can't. But I also think that, you know, all of this pressure on us as people to shop locally, to buy handmade things from small suppliers and small businesses dotted around the UK, is a privilege.
It is, to a degree. And I do want to support people's dreams. And I get that it is, you know, returns are expensive. And there is a culture of order loads of stuff and return the stuff that you don't want. But that is shopping.
Yeah.
I got charged, I had a dress that didn't fit, and I got charged £6 to send it back from quite a small dress company. It didn't bloody fit. It wasn't that I didn't like it. It didn't fit. And I will not shop there again, because what they do is not so unique and special that I can't find somebody else that does have free shipping. So I do get it, but it's a real privilege to say, oh, I'm willing to pay an extra £6 on this, or take a gamble that it's not the right thing and maybe keep it and re-gift it, versus having all the money back for, because you've already lost it. If you've paid delivery once, you don't get that money back either. You get the cost of the item. So if you've paid next day delivery for something, like I did with this bloody dress, and it didn't fit, I paid £12
to not have a dress.
To not have a dress.
To not have it. For zero dresses.
Zero dresses, just £12 spent. That woman didn't get anything that runs that dress company. I lost £12 and I had a bad consumer experience. So I guess when it's something high end, like they're such expensive things. And with jewellery, it's a weird one as well, because I imagine you get less people sending that back because it doesn't fit. It's like, oh, my ear holes are just too big for these earrings.
It's an unwinnable situation for consumers and small businesses alike. And there's no real solution to it. But there's also like an element of sort of the root cause here is that we need to improve the way that we shop online to minimize returns. The goal here should be to minimize returns, not put pressure on businesses to take a hit on losses on returns. What can you do to minimize those things? If we had some kind of better photographing of it, you know, how can you better judge the size of something that you're buying online?
I don't see how returns will not always be quite a major part of online shopping, really. Like, surely that's, especially with clothing, like more than anything with clothing, that is going to happen. So it's a bit of a thing of like, we have got very used to the fact we can do that for free. And it's really hard. It's like the Amazon phenomenon generally. Like, we're used to the fact we can buy things cheaper and get them literally the next day. So we don't tend to pay a bit more for the kind of, you know, buying them from a slightly nicer retailer, because we're just human beings. We kind of want what's nicest for us.
Just fair enough. I think if we weren't all broke, it's the same as like people buying recycled toilet paper or toilet roll made of bamboo in lockdown, because we all had a lot more money than we needed, because we couldn't bloody do anything. But as soon as people went back to living their lives and things got expensive, those green products, they're a privileged purchase. You can't afford to prioritize that. If you are looking at your basket and you've got to feed your family, it's a nice idea, but it's really going to be your first priority. And I think this is a problem. It's like, I saw a brilliant drag queen that I absolutely love tweet last week, saying that people should all leave their high street banks because of their record on, you know, like arms funding and like unethical choices. It's just like, oh, close your bank account now. You know, if you care about this, there are loads of banks. Close your bank account now. Now, that is somebody who's got enough money in the bank that any account that they apply for with some of these more small bespoke banks will be accepted. Because the new starter banks, you know, they don't want people with my mum's credit risk. My mum doesn't have a lot. My mum had to fight to find a bank that would give her a debit card that would let her access her own money, because she doesn't have an income. She doesn't work. She's been on benefits for a while. It's a privilege to be able to change banks, to have what banks want, because banks are selective now. If you're a bad credit risk, you know, they want customers that are going to buy extra products from them. They're going to put, you know,
they're going to take out credit,
savings with them. They're going to take out credit. They're going to get a mortgage. That's why they wanted to attract students years and years ago, and they were giving out popcorn machines and drinks vouchers, because they lock you in for your whole life. I'm with the bank that I signed up to when I was a student. But it's a privilege. It annoyed me and I wanted to reply, but there was no way to reply in a way on Twitter that people who love that drag queen that I also love, that love that person, wouldn't come really hard and defensively at me. But I've been working in personal finance a long time. I have been a bad credit risk. I have been a good credit risk. My mum's been a bad credit risk. I've seen people that I love unable to get a mortgage with any but one bank. And it's such a privilege to be able to be so financially solvent you can take your money somewhere else and set up an account. It's so well-intentioned, though. Mm.
But can you imagine also having the time to look around to check all this stuff? Because to be totally honest, once you start scratching at these things, you start looking up, you know, name of a bank, ethical question mark. You could do that for probably every high street bank, and you will find someone online who will say they actually back this, which is linked to arms, which is linked to whatever. And so I think, like, to even have the time and energy in your day when you're trying to work and look after your family and whatever, and to sit down and say, right, I'm going to run through all the companies I'm using and check which ones have actually done something dodgy, and then find another one that will, as you say, will have me, and also that I can spend the time getting all the forms set up and everything. You'd just have to have nothing on, to be honest. You'd have to have a completely blank schedule and just be like, right, I've got time to do all this. And I don't think anyone in life does. And it doesn't make us bad people. Like,
it was just one of those things. I was like, oh, of all the things that people need to feel shame about, I don't think we should feel shame that we're banking with a high street bank that gives us access to our money, that still have branches on the high street so you can literally go and get your money, which is a massive problem. Like, branches are closing ever. Again, online banks, a lot of them are a lot more ethical, but the cost is there are no humans on the end of it. If you are somebody who's digitally disenfranchised, if you don't know what you're doing, there's no human to help you. And that isolates people that are already really, really isolated. So it was just one of those things where I wish there was more nuance so that conversation could have been had, because it would have been a really interesting conversation to have with a high profile person to help everybody understand a little bit more about, you know, how the sort of machinations of that worked. And I was a bit frustrated. I drafted a couple of things. I was like, there's no way this won't be read as an attack on this person. It's good faith. I completely buy into the principle of it. It's just not that straightforward.
People get so caught up on kind of this. It's all, to be honest, a whole lot of it's just virtue signaling, isn't it? But a lot of what people forget is that for absolutely everyone, that is consumers and businesses alike, being ethical, being sustainable, being good people is a privilege. You have to have the money to be ethical, to buy the ethical products, to give to charity. Your business needs to be profitable before you can start paying employees loads and loads of money and giving money to charity and doing your corporate social responsibility. You've got to have a profitable business. To be able to offer free returns, to be able to do all of these things, the business has to be making money.
Yeah, I get it. But I, you know, there's two sides to it, because if everybody did that, then no change would come. But it is. It was just one of those things where I was like, oh, there's a conversation to be had here and we can't have it. And it is just one more thing for us to feel a little bit like we are disappointing and we're failing the world about. And I was like, oh, that's a shame. That's a real shame.
But the onus always falls on consumers, you know, and it's always the people who can't afford to do it.
Well, my bank, I can imagine a conversation like, hello, I would like to close my bank account, please, because you're not very ethical. And they'd go, okay, pay back your £1,800 overdraft. After I was like, good chat, goodbye. By the way, I'm staying with the bank.
Psych, you've been punked.
Bye. I'm still banking with you. I love you. Bye-bye. Like, it's just like...
You're not exactly going to hear someone out back going... stop investing in the arms now. She's called us. Yeah. She's called us on it. Get the money out of the arms. Yeah. You're right.
This woman who is worth £1 a day for every day she's in her overdraft, she is easily, we are coining in a solid £20 from her a month. Like, we got to keep her. Like, and that's the reality. I didn't realise, right, that Club Card has got a VIP section now. You can't just have a Tesco Club Card. There's a paid Tesco Club Card you can get.
No.
You can pay £8 a month for a fancy Club Card.
Like, but wait. That doesn't defeat the entire purpose. Isn't the entire purpose that you're saving money?
So you get 10% off two of your big shops a month for that.
Twice a month.
Which is up to £40. So £400 worth of shopping, £40 off. So if you're prepared to spend £400...
Club Card Plus.
Yeah, but I did not realise this. This is terribly marketed because I had no idea this existed. But yeah, you get access to like premium delivery slots and stuff as well. There are like benefits to it.
Do you know what? They've got a 1 month free trial as well.
We should try it.
You know exactly what will happen though, right?
No.
Right, I will not sign up for free trials on anything.
And Paramount Plus now is on that list, I believe.
We got Paramount Plus increasing for, number. Was it a 1 week or a 2 week free trial so we could watch Criminal Minds?
Six weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. See, this is it. I'm banning myself from free trials because I just know full well I will not cancel it. Like, I just do not have it in my abilities to cancel free trials of things. I've learned it. And now if I ever see free trial, I'm just like, I will not even engage with that.
I just want to pay. I'll pay the money.
I give up.
And finally, Ted Baker is gone. R.I.P. Ted Baker. That used to be, for me, like the first word in premium clothes. When I worked in the call centre, I aspired to Ted Baker items every day of my life. And it's like Martin Lewis said, like he said, you know, the doyen, the god of personal finance, said he feels a bit sad about it, but hasn't bought anything there for years. And it's kind of the same for me, because they used to have really fun, quirky stuff.
I've always really dug the kind of the prints, the designs. A great number of my shirts are from Ted Baker, and I had, you know, a really nice bag from there.
The floral prints used to be iconic.
And are they gone? They're gone because they're bankrupt.
Well, they've called in the administrators. They are still trading, but really they need a new business partner. And there's something that's funny but not funny here that I read, which is the name of the holding company is No Ordinary Designer Label, which is abbreviated to Noddle. Noddle has really just tickled me. But their holding company reported losses in excess of sort of pre-tax losses of in excess of 40 million on, I think it was about £320 million of sales. Huge losses, really, based on the volume of sales. Volume of sales are down and all these things. So really, they need someone else to take it over. But I think that a lot of people are pointing to, there's a period of time where Ted Baker was in a bit of a controversial position. Their founder and leader had to step down. I don't know if anyone remembers this. I think it was in the wake of a lot of the kind of the big Me Too movements and things that were happening over some forced hugging in the workplace, which had them sort of a bit sort of embroiled in scandal. And the founder stepped down and a different kind of holding company took over, the same brand that I think owns Reebok and a couple of the other American designers and things. And now this holding company has had it, but nobody's really been able to do anything with it.
I'd be astonished if that was the reason people stopped shopping there. I think the clothes got really frumpy.
Yeah.
I think they lost their way design-wise. It's a shame. Like, loads of my cool stuff is from there and it lasts so well. They are proper... Mm. Like the cuts of them, they're proper investment pieces. Every time I've bought something from there that's been like, you know, we all know the fabled story of my Ted Baker coat.
I wondered if that's what brought them down. Yeah. Are they there going, wait, so you just gave her the other size? No.
I can't see who'd want to buy it necessarily in its current guise, because it's the same thing as a body shop. It's not offering any difference to anyone else out there at the moment. You can get those floral prints, very good dupes, those floral prints on places like ASOS.
I'm sad for Ted Baker.
Yeah, I am. I'm sad for what I used to love about it, though. If they were saved, I probably still wouldn't shop there. So I'm sad, yeah. Nostalgia reasons,
yeah.
But I'm not buying anything from them. So.
There's so much to that, though, isn't there? So much to that when something goes out of business, it's like, oh, God. And it's like, oh, did you shop there a lot? Oh, God, no, no.
I haven't been there in decades.
I don't want to see it go.
Like when Woolworths went, and I was like, oh, no, the pick and mix.
I'm going to officially fire the starting pistol on this week's quickfire round. Are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
I said, are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Crowd goes wild.
Sorry, I didn't realise it was like a Glastonbury style, are you ready? You know, it's like we are going to do it regardless of if you want to or not, but we have to show enthusiasm.
If you have joined us for the first time today, firstly, where have you been for the last 2 years? But secondly, what you're about to experience is Paul and Charlotte are going to be given an item by me with robust, comprehensive information, and I need them both to tell me what they think that item is worth. The closest answer wins. So, as I said, it's Easter coming up fast. So, here are three Easter-related quickfire items for you. Item number one, an Easter Island holiday.
Okay.
Yeah?
Right.
Spend a few days walking around a remote volcanic island in the middle of the South Pacific, looking at some big stone heads whilst wondering where all the chocolate eggs and limp bunnies are, because you've misunderstood what Easter Island is all about. Now, I want to know how much it would cost per person to get from London to Easter Island for 3 nights and then back again.
Well, what I know is that Easter Island's, I think, the most remote place, inhabited place in the world. So... you have to fly to Chile, you have to fly to Santiago, and then you have to fly from there. But even that flight is something like 2,000 miles.
You're right,
right?
Paul. Yeah. Return flights from Santiago to Hangaroa, which is on the islands.
Right.
But you do get shared transfers and guided sightseeing excursions, mainly to the big heads. Is there anything else there? If there is, I haven't got it written down.
Someone is doing this holiday where you... and it, yeah. Like, surely you don't just fly to Easter Island for 3 days and fly home. Surely not.
So presumably this is part of a night... part of an itinerary. No, it's you start at Santiago.
Ah, so it's an Easter Island excursion add-on three-day package that you'd buy on top of a tour. Okay. Including this flight from London.
Yeah, plus the London flight.
All right, the whole thing in, I'm going to go £2,500.
I think it's going to be less than that. I could be really cheeky here and just go like 2,499 to cover everything below.
You can. You're allowed to do it. Hey, you're just being professional.
Yeah,
you're just being
I'm going to say 2,499.
Charlotte, by virtue of the fact that you volunteered a figure for the actual extension, you got the rear joy of being really wrong twice. So, Paul, well done. It was like bang on £2,513. So you've taken the win.
Within £13.
You were within £13. Charlotte was like way going to undercut you, but then decided to be tactical and it didn't work out. But the actual extension itself cost £1,535. So it's like just under £3,000 extension for the flight. So,
I had the Santiago one being a bit more and the extension being a bit less.
That's a lot of money for a three-day extension.
Outstanding work there, Paul. Outstanding work. Like, you smashed that. Okay, the next thing is Wonkapolli. Wonkapolli. I had to say that very carefully.
I heard Wonkapolli.
Wonkapolli. This next item might be more disappointing than the Willy Wonka experience we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. It is the official Monopoly Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory edition, and it's available from Amazon. It is based on the 1971 film version of the story, which is a great film in fairness, apart from that Cheer Up Charlie song that is more than Mother Sings, which like needs to be fired into the sun. It is shit. But otherwise, solid film, it says ideal for chocolate lovers. Now, it needs to be pointed out that none of it is edible, so it is giving us Glasgow Wonka vibes. Travel around this special Monopoly board collecting moments from the classic musical movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and it is for 6 years plus. How much for Wonkapolli?
Yeah.
Wonkapolli.
It's not a thing you're going to ask someone if they want a game of very often, is it? You're running a risk.
I have once owned a themed version of Monopoly, which I think, you know.
Okay, tell us more.
I had the Simpsons themed Monopoly. And I remember that costing at the time about £27 or £28. So I'm going to mark up for inflation and say £30.
Yeah, the figure I had 25 in my head, but I'm going off a lot less logic than that. So I'll go 25.
It is £31.80.
Okay. That's a lot of money for what is arguably a shit game.
I don't think it's been made for a while. So I think this is buying it, you know, from a previous batch. I don't think it is available now because that is the 1971 game. So maybe there's a premium for it being a bit of a collectible. What do I know? I tell you what I do know, and you're about to find out, is how much it would cost for Resurrection.
Sorry?
Easter. Easter is the time for all things Resurrection. So I want to know, how much does it cost to be cryogenically frozen, only to return if, and this is a big if, they work out how to do it? If you think 2024 is a whole plate of shit cakes, imagine coming back in 100 years' time. Cryonics or cryopreservation is the process of having your head, or if you've got the money, your entire body frozen. Today, we're looking at Alcor Life Extension Foundation, who are headquartered in Scottsdale, Arizona, because of course they are. The firm currently has 260 mugs, I mean patients, in cryopreservation. 138 through neuro cryopreservation, just the little heads, just their noggins, just the brain.
Oh, like in Futurama.
Yes, Futurama. I always think Futurama when I think of it. Just
other
the
people
heads,
have obviously had the same idea and paid for that. I don't have any frame of reference for this at all. This is, I'm going to say $250,000.
All right.
Yeah, that's a really solid guess. $200,000. I think it's maybe just a tiny bit less. Who the hell knows?
Point Paul, it comes in at $220,000. So you weren't far off.
Wow.
So,
God, between us, we basically called.
It's been a good day today. You've been really close with your guesses.
That was high-level play, right? In that we basically called the price of something we had literally no frame of reference
for. Fair play.
All three rounds, hit after hit. Wow. You've been within £10 of like the first two, and this one is a big one. So percentage-wise, you've smashed. £175,500 in British money. And if you haven't got that, but you still think this absolute hokum is worth investing in, it's only £64,000 to just get your head done.
Just get your head done.
That is it. That's the end. We are going to say goodbye to our lovely listeners for yet another week. Thank you so much for listening to us, following us down this path of whimsy. We're always keen to hear your thoughts. So, you know, give us a tweet. We got Charlotte on Twitter now, at @charreds. We've got Paul Watson on Twitter. He also uses his own name. We're all very easy to find. You can Google us quite easily. Yeah, tell us your top tips, tell us your deals, tell us your rip-offs, and visit Hot UK Deals Forum to share those with us as well. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please rate, review it, tell a friend, listen to it on multiple devices at once. Do you know what sounds better than the False Economy podcast? False Economy podcast in stereo, baby. Put it on your phone and your laptop at the same time. You will not regret it. We will not regret it. And if you didn't enjoy it, you now have 30 days to return this podcast for a full refund. Terms and conditions apply. Your statutory rights are not affected.